This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Excellent. Weather today, highs of 70 degrees centigrade, lows of 11 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a fine, dry day with spells of sunshine and light winds. Presumably the same can be said in Birmingham land. Is that right, Katie Grimmison?
I think so, yeah. I hope so, because I'll be on the sun lounger if it is.
Obviously keeping the whole thing seriously focused on a whole range of things. That's why we like to say...
Katie Grimmison, Birmingham's gift to the galaxy on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM and more.
So, after 3 years of being a fantastic co-presenter in studio, you now graduated once again to the area of being the launch person for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Do you feel any different, Katie? I mean, has it changed your whole perspective on life?
Being a graduate?
Well, graduand at present, graduates to be, but, you know, launching the show, what's the sort of grimace and take on this? Do you feel different?
I do feel different, yeah. I feel a bit more relaxed. Well, I'm relaxed at the minute, but I'm constantly looking for jobs and I'm always being rejected. So it does get you down at times, but you just have to keep going.
You've got to tell your narrative and tell your story the way you want it to unfold, and then you'll cease being that. Just focus on the positives, collate all the other things together, and then when you write your book and the text, it'll be opening up a whole range of magical things. Richard Fitzwilliams is coming up shortly on the show. I suspect he might have something to do with the recent survey. We heard it in the news that actually the Royals actually cost us 56 pence per person. Is that good value for money? What do you think, Katie?
I don't think it is.
You don't think it is? So you actually begrudge 56p going out of your pocket into the royal family and the whole sort of Windsor household. Is that right?
Well, it's going to mount up, isn't it, if it's 56p out of everyone's pocket.
Yeah, but surely in terms of value for money, would you rather have a presidential situation as they have possibly with Uruguay, who has clearly sort of said, Luis Suarez, he's not selected for good manners. Well, why would he be, really? You know, it's important that you actually win. That's the important factor.
Have you been watching the World Cup, Alex?
Do you know, I have, Katie, yes, in between a whole variety of other bits and pieces. And no doubt Birmingham was full of street celebrations and street parties, given that England managed to get a glorious point against the might of Costa Rica. If we add that to the cricket scenario against Sri Lanka, and you can tell that it's been a glorious summer of sports. The Olympics seem such a long way away, don't they, really?
I know. So what else have you been doing then?
Whoa,
busy at uni?
Turning the interview tables, etc. Well, we've been prepping actually for a show which is launching this coming Tuesday, which is another edition of Parsec, the science fiction special that we put together with, of course, Dave Milling. And also it's a real cause of celebration because it's the 250th edition of SFX magazine. And Richard Edwards, the deputy editor of SFX magazine, which is available now, of course, will be talking about their biggest ever poll that they've put together. It's 250 greatest moments in sci-fi and fantasy voted by the reader. I don't want to give too many details away with respect to this, but in at number 250, it's The Thief of Baghdad, which was put forward by Terry Gilliam, the director of Brazil, and of course the movie 12 Monkeys. So it'd be interesting to see whether there are any surprises in terms of the 250 editions actually. Number 97 is The Matrix, which was suggested by the writer and creator of the text Divergence. That's Veronica Roth. So exciting times as far as that's actually concerned. We had hoped that Ed Wellman might have actually been joining us in the studio, but he's been so exhausted these days, we just think he just needs to take time out and sort things through. Anyway.
Yeah, I think he does as well.
Well, exactly. This is very true. I mean, you can only do so many things before you go completely crazy. Don't forget, you could actually contact us, studio@sirenonline.co.uk. You might also find, Katie, that the Midweek Drive Morning Edition actually has a brand new spanking... Oh, there we are. Wonderful. Super-duper website on our sister service, southsidebroadcasting.com, which is all tweety-ified and all sorts of other things you can actually go through there. Tweety-fied as a new adjective with Twitter and Facebook and so on. So what are you going to do for the rest of the day, given that it's a glorious day? Will it be the sun lounger? Will it be job applications? Will it be internships? What will you be doing, Katie Grimmison?
Most likely the sun lounger. I was meant to write a report yesterday and finish my new CV off because I went to an event last week in Birmingham, what was called the National Vintage Awards, And it was really good because I'd been doing voluntary work on it. And it was like I'd stepped back into the 40s and the 50s. Like, women turned up and they were just dressed with all, like, nice 50s-style gowns on and that. And you know I love that type of era. So I've got to do a report for that. But I was sunbathing for most of the day. So I suppose I better get that done, really.
Always important. Don't forget to wear sunscreen, of course. You can never be too careful in these days, and make sure that it's applied liberally. That's the important thing, and a high factor is very important. You know, we tend to have this thing in Britain where we just think, oh, it's the sun, we'll run out and do all sorts of crazy things.
I know.
Last week, of course, it was the 130th Lincolnshire show. We were taking part in that. We start the build-up now to the Great Yorkshire Show with Nigel Pulling, who joins us on Wednesday. And, of course, a couple of weeks' time, the Great Yorkshire Show, the country's biggest country show event, will also be launching, and we build up to that. Any plans to do any festival attending? I mean, obviously, the Vintage Fair, that would have been an ideal location report, I suspect, Katie, really. You really should have sort of followed through on that one in terms of putting this out, either for us here at Siren FM or for Radio Warwickshire. So always keep your recording devices to hand. That's the important thing.
No, not at the minute. No, I'm just busy looking for paid employment, really.
Okay.
Learning to chill for a bit.
You've just had a virtual 10-minute commercial here on Lincoln's first community radio station, Siren FM, saying Katie Grimason is available for a fee for any kind of useful work which makes the best use of her university qualification, which is an honours degree, will be an honours degree in American Studies, a whole wealth of other opportunities, including obviously a regular correspondent, and of course if you want your perspective on cricket, then Katie Grimason is the girl for you. So excellent stuff, Katie. It's been fantastic and an honour to actually launch the show with respect to yourself.
I think it has as well.
It's very true. I think the applause and everything else will be working through with that. And I'm sure that Richard Fitzwilliams will be delighted to know that you were the warm-up girl to actually get us into the mood for Thursday, June the 26th, 2014. So we need to ask you those last two questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic connection with us on the show today?
Yeah, it's been a really good start to the day.
Okay, well, you can only get better. So can we look forward to seeing you in the very near future?
Yeah, of course you can.
Yeah, there we are. Katie Grimason, still part of the team, still rocking and rolling. Nothing to do with in-between days whatsoever. Just have to cope, that's all. Online now, fresh from Royal Ascot, as opposed to Ascot, of course. Let's get the pronunciation sorted out here. It's Ascot. We had sufficient challenges yesterday with Ravelli and Ravalli and Louisiana State University. But we are delighted to welcome back a gentleman who I suspect will say 56 pence per day for people to actually support the royal family is a ridiculously cheap bargain. Isn't that right, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, it's costs us all 1p per week. I think that's what you meant.
Oh, 56 pence per year, you're quite right. Exactly.
Yes, indeed.
It's true, what is
interesting about these accounts, and today we've got both the sovereign grant, that is the money we pay the Queen, most of which goes on salaries and upkeep of palaces, and also the Prince of Wales's accounts. He gets most of his from a 14th century arrangement where the revenue of the Duchy of Cornwall comes to him. I think that it's excellent value for money, but at long last, they have at least got some basis for the calculation of what I would call reasonable royal accounts, simply because these are always a battleground. And what was happening was that Queen hadn't had a pay rise for 20 years since 1991, when the civil list was last increased, and it was decided in 2011-12 to calculate what the Queen is given from the state as 15% of the value of the crown lands. That's over £250 million, which George III in 1760 surrendered to the nation in exchange for the civil list. As a result, the Queen can then use these funds to prioritize. And that is what has happened. There'll be obvious eyebrows raised at the 4.5 million for the Duchess, Duke and Duchess of Cambridge's new apartment at Kensington Palace, 3.4 million in the current financial year under discussion. The point is, it's 50 years since the apartment was renovated. And the other problem is they had a lot of difficulties with asbestos. They're gradually putting together a program for repairs for the Crown Estate, and there's a great deal to do there. But there's no doubt, I mean, if you keep or you have a head of state, it's the famous and most high-profile monarchy in the world, there is no point in doing anything other than doing it well. And it's quite extraordinary how the monarchy actually raises money and the amount it brings in for charity, for British business, and also, of course, the highlights that appeal so to tourists.
This seems to be one of those stories which you can guarantee it's going to hit the headlines probably about this time every year, really. And it does seem to be ridiculous that every time we seem to come to the same conclusion. Well, OK, 56 pence per year, it's value for money. And yet we still have folk who actually would turn around and say, no, no, I don't think they should take that. No, no, no. It's a pity, but never mind. We'll just see what actually happens. You were doing business for CNN, or doing the business for CNN, at the proclamation ceremony for Felipe VI of Spain. Clearly had a major impact on the Spanish World Cup team, who proceeded to actually follow the footsteps of England, or was it the reverse? After trying so hard for many years to actually be just like Spain, England finally managed to achieve it and go home after two games. But to conflate the World Cup and FIFA with Felipe VI of Spain, who knows? But you were a live commentator for CNN. And what was the proclamation ceremony like?
The proclamation ceremony was austere and very low-key. The emphasis had to be on the fact that Spain's still in a deep economic crisis. I mean, it was dignified indeed, and it looked colourful enough, but there were no foreign dignitaries. It was in front of Parliament, and the King's speech was attempting to reach out to those, the disadvantaged, the unemployed, the young, and to emphasize a future for the monarchy. It's true he paid tribute to his father because, of course, Spain owes him a tremendous debt. Ex-King Juan Carlos is guiding of Spain to the democracy. This was absolutely... It was extraordinary what he did in the 70s, and of course, to ensure that the attempted coup in 1981 was immediately sat on. But there's little doubt there was hubris. There's little doubt over 30... Juan Carlos had reigned for 39 years, and there's absolutely no question at all that in recent years, especially on an absolutely catastrophic elephant hunt to Botswana with his mistress when he fell and fractured his hip, this meant his popularity, especially among younger Spaniards who don't remember what he did to guide the country after Franco to democracy. The majority of Spaniards thought he should abdicate. And it's a humiliating and a very sad way for him to go, but there's absolutely no question. Firstly, he exacerbated by health problems, and secondly, another matter that the Spanish royal family will need to get behind it, and that is the investigation in the new king's brother-in-law and also his sister, with reference to tax fraud and embezzlement of public funds. Now, that is very serious, and that is an ongoing matter. There's no question that the Spanish royal family has reached its most difficult period, rather like ours had in the 1990s.
Well, who knows what the future will have in store?
I think the future will have in store the emphasis that it's important to have a symbol of national unity, especially when you've got such strong separatist movements. I'm thinking not so much of the Basques at the moment, but in Catalonia. That is important. The other thing, when you've got the 1 out of 5 young people unemployed, I mean, the politicians aren't trusted. They certainly don't trust the bankers. It's the feeling that the monarchy's let them down. That's what the king was trying to address in his speech.
From royalty in Spain to royalty at Ascot. Royal Ascot, of course, last week was an event which we didn't manage to do any live links with you because you weren't actually based in the media centre. And other than that, I think one or two challenges would have been present with respect to mobile phones and so on.
Yes, I'm afraid they are absolutely terrible. I mean, next year perhaps we might be able to do something in the actual press office.
Exactly. There. We shall have a word with Nick Smith. You know, it's high time that we connect with that because I've been missing from Ascot phone quite some time.
And also the the scale of it, one of the impressive things, when you've got 5 days of almost all good weather, give or take a few gusts of wind, I mean, this is glorious. You really have got the Royal Race Meeting. Queen Anne found it in 1711, and the Royal Procession, which has been regular since 1920. I mean, this, it really comes alive. And it's a glorious event. It's a form of paradise to see the fashions and the rather glorious mix of hats, feathers here, butterflies there, twirls and frills here. It really is fabulous. And the colours, that is one of the things that's very interesting. And the other thing is Prince Harry attended for the first time, and he was there for 2 days, which is important.
You see, there we have it. It has been said by, indeed, the manager of the English football team, Roy Hodgson, that if Prince Harry had actually gone earlier, it might have been Greg Dyke, actually, who pointed this out, another Greg Dyke classic, that if Prince Harry had turned up in Brazil sooner, then perhaps England might not have actually headed out of the FIFA World Cup. But never mind.
That is an interesting point.
Well, precisely.
But I would also make the point that Queen's horse narrowly failed to win the Gold Cup a second time. Estimate came second. Last year, the Queen had her Gold Cup victory. She had 22 winners at Ascot, and she was thrilled. There was wonderful film footage of the scene in the Royal Box.
Which is fine if you've also had an each-way wager, presumably. And speaking of wagers, were the keen aspects relating to the Queen's headwear and Her Majesty's colour of hat, was that as crisp and as robust as ever?
Well, indeed, it's one of the quirky aspects of Ascot that this is it's one of the traditions. And there's no doubt, I mean, if you were an admirer of fashion, I mean, the Queen is absolutely extraordinary. It's not just the sheer robustness of someone who's 88. It's the fact she is so fashionable. And also, in her most recent state visit to France, I mean, absolutely glorious. That state banquet, that gown, I thought it was lovely. But she looked as if she was thoroughly enjoying Royal Ascot, because, of course, she loves the races, because she, as we all know, is so knowledgeable about equestrian matters.
Richard, stay with us. We're going to take a short musical break, after which we'll get your film views.
With one light on and one run, I know you're up when I get home. With one small step.
The fabulous singer-songwriter Dido with Hunter. And I'm sure Richard will already be able to say, ah, yes, very, very wonderful link there to a recent movie directed by Amma Asante with music composed by Rachel Portman, which possibly ties in with that in a loose way if you talk about the adventures of a certain individual. Isn't that right, Richard?
Well, it is indeed, yes. Yes, okay. Dido. And very, very interesting. This is a movie about Dido Elizabeth Bell. The movie is called Bell. It is directed, as you say, by Amma Asante. And she's superbly paid. Watch nominations coming up for this role by Google.
Already? We've just wrapped up the 2014 Academy Awards. We're not going to get more Academy Awards for 2015, are we?
Well, I think we're looking for BAFTA, certainly, here, nominations anyway, because Martha Raw's performance as an illegitimate mixed-race daughter of an 18th-century Royal Navy Admiral, she's brought up by William Murray. He's the first Earl of Mansfield, and he is the Lord Chief Justice. That is so important. He's her great-uncle. The other irony is that she is brought up together with Lady Elizabeth Murray, who's his great niece, and there's a painting of them hanging in Scone Place, which is one that tells the tale, which is indeed remarkable. Interesting that much of this movie, which was set in the 1870s, this is at the period when the Lord Chief Justice was adjudicating on the Zong atrocity, when the crew of a slave ship threw over 100 slaves overboard to claim insurance for jettisoned cargo. It's utterly scandalous, of course, and we see the obscenity today more clearly than some did at that time. But what effect did his fondness for the daughter of a slave, and on the one hand, have on his views? I mean, a part of this is fictional, but it's not only has a certain dramatic flow, but there's some superlative performances, because Tom Wilkinson as the Earl of Mansfield, the Lord Chief Justice, he is absolutely superb. I mean, he really does have presence. And again, it's got Miranda Richardson, and it has Penelope Wilton, a lot of good things. Emily Watson too as Lady Mansfield. A look at very racially prejudiced 18th century England. Wonderful period touches, and a great deal of it filmed, what I thought was filmed, near here, because the Earl of Mansfield lived at Kenwood. It seemed that Kenwood was closed at the time. They used five other houses and improvised, but they did so superbly. And visually, this is also a treat. So it's got drama. Its heart does, at towards the end of the film, well, it moves into rather obvious areas of rejoicing, because you're dealing with an atrocity and you know exactly how it's going to end. But it doesn't alter the fact that this is an extremely sensitively handled film. And you're looking at racial prejudice in another century. Dido is well-dressed, and though she doesn't eat with the family, she's treated as one of them. The interesting thing is she's an heiress, because she inherits, whereas Lady Elizabeth Murray, with whom she's brought up, is not. And this is a movie that is extremely enjoyable. Obviously, we see some, learn some unacceptable facts about the monstrous Zong atrocity. It was one that Turner captured in his painting Slave Ship so unforgettably. But it's an extremely good, sensitive film, and it has an absolutely wonderful cast.
You mentioned Her Majesty is currently 88, only 10 years younger. A fine soul who directed the fabulous movie Kes. Ken Loach, of course, 78 and still going strong, and he's produced Jimmy's Hall. I actually directed it.
And it even said, though I understand, hopefully he may be rethinking, that it's going to be his last picture.
No.
Well, indeed.
He's only 78.
I know, and I mean, this is an engaging film, and it's, I wouldn't say it's particularly dramatic, but it's got a lot of good things in it. It's set in the Ireland of the 1930s and deals with Jimmy Grafton, the only man ever to be deported from Ireland. This, of course, is in the period of the Irish Free State. Opening footage, very grainy, is of New York. Jimmy Grafton has been to New York, and he is returning, and the desire is to open his hall. This is in County Leitrim, and the movie is ideologically very simplistic. You've got the church and the landowners, who are the villains, and you've got Jimmy, who is undoubtedly preaching what they consider to be an outrageous communist doctrine, but in reality it appears to consist a little more than enjoying themselves in the hall, doing such things as dancing, but also keeping an eye on those who were evicted unjustly by local landlords. What makes this film very interesting is a good script, very good script, and also a wonderful performance by Jim Norton, who's got a television following, as Father Sheridan. Extremely well-developed character. Of course, he is symbolic of the ridiculous injustices of the church and their attitudes, but it's a finely nuanced performance. Eileen Henry is wonderful as Jimmy's mother. And there's a hilarious scene where the police arrive to arrest him. They go into his house, believe that he's gone upstairs to collect some belongings, and his mother locks the front door and won't open it, so the only way they can get out is Keystone Cop style, squeezing themselves to the windows. It was very funny. It's a movie which it's totally predictable, but it is very enjoyable, and a sensitive performance by Simone Kirby as Una, who is Jimmy's sweetheart. Well photographed too, and, as I say, well-scripted, predictable politically, and it's not got the dramatic impact of the wind that sweeps the barley, which, of course, won at the Pond or at Cam, but that and Mr. Turner represented Britain in the competition this year for the Palme d'Or, and this is a movie that it is extremely enjoyable. My hope is that it will not be Ken Loach's last. Simplistic it may be, but it's always watchable.
Social realism, two words that tend to go hand in hand when we start talking about Ken Loach. There are one or two folk who might just remember Kathy Come Home, of course, the Wednesday play series back in the 60s, Up the Junction, of course, and, of course, Kez, we mentioned that from the 70s, and it is something which, certainly in terms of British filmmaking, there was a suggestion that times Ken Loach with one or two other directors who obviously were around and working through that, of course, Michael Winner being one of them. And probably, although I wouldn't say necessarily Michael Winner is connected within that, another Ken, of course, who was also key to the sort of British film industry with respect to his composer photographs and so on. And, you know, I've actually forgotten the other Ken's surname. You're actually going to help me, Richard.
I think you're thinking perhaps of Ken Adam.
Exactly.
Sir Ken Adam, I think.
Yes, yeah. Is that, are you talking about Ken Adam? No, I don't think so. But he's a set designer.
He was a set designer,
yes.
He made a tremendous contribution.
Yeah. No, never mind. I'm sure we'll find out who it is in a matter of time. But would you say that, I mean, clearly, as far as directors are concerned, you can just continue to go on and on. But it can be quite stressful, I would have thought, putting all the things together. So maybe he's just decided that's it. He'll hold fire. And he does seem to have switched, in terms of social realism, from obviously the British scene to the Irish scene, as you mentioned, with the winds that shakes the barley and so on. So interesting times there.
Interesting director. As I said, those who are his admirers, they'll go and see this movie, and visually there's a postcard prettiness to some of it, and there are scenes, there's one rather lyrical scene that he, Jimmy and Una, dance in this hall. It's intriguing, too, to see an individual victimised after the British, sometime after the British had left, and an indication of the bitter feuds that divided Ireland subsequently.
Exactly. And I suppose it ties in very neatly with respect to our whole sort of discussion of the royalty and the monarchy, etc. That could set up a whole new field, which I don't...
Oh, it could indeed. The Queen at 85, her state visit to Ireland, and subsequently President Higgins's return visit, and of course the Queen, as we know, has been in Northern Ireland. It can't be every day that a monarch is shown round a prison by the First Minister and Deputy First Minister, both of whom were former inmates.
Exactly. Ken Russell was the gentleman I was thinking about.
Oh, Ken Russell, indeed, an outrageous figure in every sense.
Exactly. So there we are.
And deeply creative, and no doubt, though, that Oscar Wilde's quip about moderation being a fatal thing and nothing succeeding like excess apply to him.
Ken Russell, Ken Loach, Ken Branagh, it's all Ken today. And I dinner Ken, as many a Scotsperson would have possibly said. At which point, we have to say, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Richard Fitzwilliams?
I most certainly have.
And I take it we can look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Indeed, yes.